Ryan Rashog from TSN joins us. Shogger, how are you?
Doing well today, buddy.
Excellent. We'll get to the order stuff in a second. Give me your thoughts on Brandon Saad, 6 years, $6 million a year, and Ryan O'Reilly's contract of 7.5 over seven with basically a massive signing bonus every year.
Yeah, they're getting creative, aren't they? Finding ways to just get guys paid. Like, it's funny, like, the teams aren't wanting to overspend too much in unrestricted free agency, but they will spend a ton to get their assets done long term. And that's what we're going to see. I mean, this year, the way the unrestricted free agent crop was watered down, it's going to be like this more and more often because teams, they have the abilities now to longer deals and they can just get their own assets locked up. So, you know, you give up assets and trading for a guy, you got to lock them down. And both these teams felt the need to do that. I'm not sure about Saad. Like, that's a lot of money, and that's a long, long-term deal. And he's a good player. Like, he's a really good player, but he's not I don't know if he's quite there yet. They're betting that he'll grow into that deal and that's what he'll end up being worth. But I haven't seen that from him just yet. And he hasn't produced in a way that would justify those kind of numbers. But that said, I think we've all watched him in the playoffs. We know he's a good young player. And Ryan O'Reilly, I mean, they want him to be an elite centerman. He's a really good, you know, pretty high-end two-way center or two-way player. And, again, they traded for him. They give up assets for him. You got to be standing there at the end of the day with the guy signed and done. But big money deals for guys that I wouldn't say either would be considered elite.
Yeah, you know, I was looking at Brandon Saad's numbers, and, you know, in his draft year, he definitely didn't put up huge numbers, 55 and 59 games. And then, you know, he did have 76 points in 44 games the next season, which is obviously very good. But, you know, he's never been like that massive point-producing guy, right?
Yeah.
And so that, to me, is the concern when you say, okay, here's a winger who, you know, did score 23 goals last year and 52 points. But if you're a $6 million forward and you're a winger, because usually wingers aren't the guys who are leading your team all over the place. And you've got to be, you know, I would think at least a 65 to 75 point player, no?
Well, that's just it. I was just going to ask you that. How many points do you have to score as a $6 million forward to justify your existence, right? What's the expectation of Nugent Hopkins and Eberle that they'll be meeting expectations of a $6 million contract? Well, really, anything less than 60 points is, it's not great. And so Brandon Saad, I mean, if really for what he's capable of at his age, if he's 45 to 55 points, that's a good year for Brandon Saad for where he's at. But now all of a sudden you've got $6 million hanging over your name and you need to produce more than that. And so now there's tons of pressure to be maybe reaching a little beyond what you're capable of. But that's the way it goes. Guys sign those deals sometimes. And you know what? Maybe he'll surprise us all and there'll be another level of offense that you know, comes out in his game. But, I mean, 20-plus goals a season, between 20 and 25 goals a season is probably a reasonable expectation for Brandon Saad for what he's capable of. $6 million, well, now you're looking at needing to push 25 to 30.
Yeah, and I think, you know, he had 23 goals last year. He's going to get way more opportunity, and he's playing with Ryan Johansson, right? Like, that, I think, is going to be their top line. I think, you know, this is a guy now, though, they're paying him to expect him to be, I think, a 65-plus point player next year.
Well, and that's dangerous, right? Like, you give a guy money based on what you want him to be and what you want him to develop into. And lots of teams do it. You sign young players thinking they'll develop into it, right? And so, if you've watched Brandon Saad, you know what the skill set is, right? He's a big guy. He's a difficult guy to play against. He's heavy. He can score goals, but that's a big contract, and he'll be needing to push well beyond what he's accomplished so far to justify that deal. But that's the going rate for, you know, guys that are under 24 years of age who you want to do long-term deals with. You know, the other option is to bridge a guy. But then who knows what you're paying for him after the fact.
Ryan Rashog joins us. Shar, what when you look at the orders right now and Peter Chiarelli, a lot of people wondering, is he done? Do you think he makes another addition or just a subtraction to his defense corps?
Yeah, you know what? I think there'll be a subtraction. If he has the ability to make another addition that would be a top three or four defenseman, I think he will, but there'll have to be subtraction that comes with that, right? So something's got to give on the back end. They've got a lot of guys there. I still think they're looking for top-end guys through trade if they can find it, but I don't know that they'll be able to. So to me, it's one of we'll see what they decide to do with Justin Schultz. We'll see what they decide to do with Nikita Nikitin, and we'll see what they decide to do with Andrew Ferentz. It's kind of one of those three guys to me who could be coming or going. We'll have to wait and see what kind of a deal he can work out.
Yeah, like when you think moving a guy out, Nikita Nikitin's the top of the list, right?
I don't. For sure.
You see
but
them moving anywhere?
Go, right?
Yeah, that's
you,
exactly
I mean,
what I'm saying.
Go?
Yeah. Unless,
I mean, if you're talking about trading a player and having another and being willing to retain salary, teams I could see would be a lot more willing to do that deal with Andrew Ferentz than Nikita Nikitin. I think teams would be willing to, I mean, Ferentz makes less. He could play on a lot of teams. I just think that if you're looking at retaining salary to move out a defenseman, Ferentz is a more likely candidate for other teams being willing to do that. Now, Andrew has a no trade, and I don't know that they're going to or not, but we all see the logjam that's happening on the blue line and something's got to give. I just don't know where Nikitin goes. Like, who takes him?
Mm. The only team I thought maybe is if to get to the floor would be Arizona. They've got Ekman-Larsson and Mahalik and Grossman, Stone, and Connor Murphy. That's it for defensemen, right? They got Pronger on their cap, but he obviously isn't going to play.
Yeah, and maybe, you know what, maybe there is a fit there. Maybe you have to wait and see because there's still some guys floating around in free agency that could fit that bill as well. Maybe if they strike out on a few or if they can't find what they like. But, I mean, even if the Oilers, you can retain 50% of a guy's cap, right?
Yeah.
Of his salary. So what does that end up being? He's 4.5, so
it'd be
$2.25 million.
Yeah.
So even for somebody to be willing to pay Nikitin $2.25 million, you're going to be hard-pressed to find a team willing to pay him that, let alone the double the Oilers are faced with paying him this year.
I wonder, you could send him to the minors, and it's a $3.6 million cap hit instead of $4.5 million. Right? I wonder, like, I'm hoping this year that the Oilers, because they're obviously not in a cap crunch by any stretch, and if their owner's willing to want to pay a guy to be in the minors, which historically they've proven they're willing to do that in the past, that you come to training camp, and if Griffin Reinhardt and Darnell Nurse are clearly better than him, they might have no option but to send him to the minors.
Yeah, I mean, it's one thing to pay Keith Ollie $1 million to sit in the minors. It's another thing to pay Nikita Nikitin $4.5 million to play him. I mean, that's asking a lot of your owner. And for...
They did it for Surrey.
Yeah, I know. And that was an interesting situation. You know, I think the player had pretty openly, in their minds, disrespected the organization and... You know, whether you believe that or not or whatever, I think that's where they were coming from. So that's a little bit of an easier pill to swallow. But it wasn't so long ago that guys that are still working for this team convinced the owner to lay that money out for this guy and now to be playing him in the minors. So you could be right. That could be where he lands. A buyout is still a possibility, but a few things need to line up. The stars need to align properly for that to be able to happen. I don't know that it will. And so... I don't know. I mean, one more year, it'll be painful, and he'll probably be in and out of the lineup. Maybe he'll surprise people. Who knows? The last time Nikitin played really well, I'm pretty sure, is when he had a contract coming up. So maybe this being a contract year and with his NHL future in jeopardy, maybe they're willing to wait and see what he can bring.
Well, I was going to ask you, he can't possibly be worse than last year. So I guess that's the positive. And then, do you think he can rebound enough to be better than Nurse and Reinhardt?
Good question. I can't say about Griff yet because we need to get eyes on Griffin here at the pro level more than we've seen it. A few clips on NHL.com. I need to see him a little bit more. I could see them saying, you know what, let Griffin play in the minors for another year, and while Nikitin's healthy, let him be in the NHL, let him... They're paying him anyways. Nothing wrong with letting Griffin. I mean, the difference between them right now might not be miles and miles, and that's not disrespecting Griffin. He's a young player, right? So you have Nikitin in the NHL playing while he's healthy. You have Griffin in the minors where he'll play 24 minutes a game instead of 12 or 13 or 14. maybe that just makes more sense to him. You suck it up for 1 year. Chances are Nikitin's not going to be healthy for the whole year. He hasn't been able to be very often. And while he's with them, just play him or have him be your seventh guy, and you just got to live with it for one more year.
Ryan Schock from TSN joins for Schock Report, brought to you by Belvan Construction. The final Rashad report of the summer, when we talk to you again in September, what is going to be your number one question heading into Oilers training camp?
Ooh, that's a good one. Well, I'll have a bunch. Let's take Connor McDavid out of the picture because everyone's going to be curious and see how he looks and see how much of an impact he's going to be able to make right away and all those things. Let's take him out of the mix because he's just kind of an entity unto himself. I'm going to be keeping a really close eye on what Justin Schultz and Nail Yakupov look like. To me, these are two bubble players with the Oilers as far as being a part of this or not. It could easily go either way with both of these players. So I'm going to be looking for the kind of condition Justin Schultz looks like he's in. If it looks like he put in work over the summer to get stronger. I don't think I won't ever accuse Justin Schultz of being a player who's out of shape. But every year that he's come back, it's been waiting to see if he's put on the weight and the muscle and if the strength is there yet. This isn't an 18-year-old kid. He's in his mid-20s now. This is a guy who should have the metabolism and the ability to put on the strength if he wants to. Yet the last couple seasons he's come in and it hasn't been there. So I feel like I'm going to know in the first 20 minutes of seeing Justin Schultz off the ice how serious he was about making a change and turning this thing in the right direction. So I'll be keeping a close eye on Justin Schultz's physical conditioning, his strength, and how he looks. This was a corner that Jeff Petrie had to turn, and until he took it seriously and did it properly, his career didn't turn that corner. Once he did, it was a different Jeff Petrie. So to me, that is a huge one. This is a very important player for the Oilers if he develops properly, or it could be a guy they move on for draft picks.
Schultz is definitely one for me. I honestly don't have many questions about Connor McDavid. When I look at draft picks the last few years, like, I expect Connor McDavid right now to be a 60-point player, and I don't think that's putting unrealistic expectations on the kid. I just think who he's paired with, all the guys around him, and just how good he is and how good young kids are today coming into the NHL. Is he going to struggle some nights? Sure, but yeah, McDavid to me, like, there's way bigger questions. Schultz, Yakupov, definitely too. I'm curious who they play McDavid with more than I'm curious about McDavid. I think right now, based on the lineup they have, Hall and Purcell make the most sense, unless they're going to go Hall with Eberle and McDavid and then put Yakupov, if they want him, in their top six with Nugent Hopkins and Pouliot.
Yeah, well, I mean, they can go Korpikoski, Lander, and Yakupov on a third line. They could go Korpikoski, Lander, and Purcell. That's kind of a ready-made third line. There's a really good chance that Mark Letestu starts the season ahead of Anton Lander, by the way. I mean, I think that Lander's a traditionally slow starter, and he's unfamiliar with this coach. So we could see Letestu in a third-line role with Korpikoski and Purcell. There's a ready-made third line as well. Draisaitl will be an interesting one, too, whether he can slide in on that left side. Korpikoski's going to make life difficult for either he or Matt Hendricks because he's a fast player who's not afraid to hit, knows his role, can kill penalties. He's very useful. And so Leon is going to have to show he can contribute offensively, because he's not going to do any of those other things. He's not going to hit, and he's not a real fast player. So he's going to have to show, I can provide offense on a third line if you keep me. It's going to be tough for him to do that. And so that third line will be a real key point to see what the Oilers are thinking. The idea was to make it a scoring third line, yet they put players in place who could be more role players on that line.
Yeah, I'm curious to see how it all breaks down. And as we all know, lines never stay the same for any extended period of time. Yeah. Maybe they will, but injuries and slumps and whatever have you, have some guys rotating in and out. That and the competition on the blue line, Ryan, to me, will be the big one. What does Griffin Reinhart look like? How good is Darnell Nurse going to look as a 20-year-old? Could he be Alex Pietrangelo? We'll wait and see.
Yeah, I mean, Darnell's going to be a beast. Like, he, even just watching him the last 3 days, his agility is unreal. I mean, he just blasts that puck. I think I said it yesterday, he might just power his way into this lineup. It might not make sense from a number standpoint for him to be there, but he might not give him a choice. He looks like he could be that ready and that good. Now, once the game picks up and the speed picks up, it all comes down to decision-making. That's the difference between Darnell Nurse being in the NHL or not, is his decision-making and his reads. Physically, he's ready. Speed-wise, he's ready. Mentally, he's ready. It's just strictly a matter of when it's up to full speed, are 90% of his decisions good ones, or is he making mistakes, and does he need some time to make those decisions at a little bit of a different pace in the American League? To me, that's the only thing, is the decision-making in the hockey sense.
Schauger, have a good summer. We will chat with you in September.
Okay, sounds good. And if anything comes up here in the next little bit, happy to jump on any time with you.
Well, yeah, well, the San Diego Chargers, Antonio Gates. Yeah, let's talk some NFL.
Yeah, absolutely. I'll be your specialist.
Thanks, buddy.